Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Trolling with Logic for 28th of April 2013. It's just past 4 p.m. in the UK, just past 11 a.m. Eastern Time in the US. We are a kind of regular show on science, skepticism, secularism, philosophy, all that kind of good stuff. If you do want to call in today, it's Skype contact Trolling with Logic, and like we always say, bear in mind when you call in, you grant us permission to use your likeness, so no funny legal stuff afterwards. The sound, the video and audio is uploaded to iTunes and YouTube afterwards for later viewing. Also, if you're listening on the podcast, if you've got any questions or any suggestions for us, it's contact@trollingwithlogic.com. So I'll very quickly introduce my one-man team with me today. Ali from Abatius, it's great to have you back.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, and as you can probably see from the screen, our scheduled guest, we don't know where he is right now. You know, guests have their own schedules and all that, so we're going to have to very quickly improvise here. So, Ali, maybe you could tell people a little bit about Albert. Like, should he come up, then we can just talk a little bit about what happened to him last year.
Well, I mean, I know Albert from his YouTube videos, and Albert made YouTube videos about the same thing that I do YouTube videos about, which is Islam, right? Well, mostly Islam, let's say. He, I think, has a little bit more of a broad sense of religion. And I think that because he's actually a religious studies graduate from Egypt.
Yeah, and if I remember right, he's from a Christian family as well.
That's right. He's from a Christian background and living in a heavily, overtly Islamic society. So he's pretty well versed in Islam as well. And so we both kind of went after religion, but he, I think, in a bigger way went after religion in general rather than, for instance, I went after Islam very particularly. Sometimes I went after Christianity and stuff, but you know, for the most part, I'm talking to people who are Muslim, so that's what I do. But Albert, I think, had a little bit more of a broad, sweeping critique of religion, and he was very good. I listened to his videos when they came out, when he put them out. I'm subscribed to him. I was subscribed to him, and I enjoyed listening to what he had to say. I thought it was very well informed. He's very polite, very non-confrontational, if you will. He just kind of put out the facts and gave his opinion on what these things were and tried to be friendly about it. Of course, I don't want to get into what happened, but that's basically my knowledge of Albert, and I'm not sure. I think we did talk once after his whole ordeal had taken place directly on Skype, I think. But before that, we hadn't really talked much. But that's at least my background knowledge about Albert and what he does, what he did, at least. I'm not sure. Yeah. I don't think he's put out any videos recently, at least not because I haven't been following YouTube because of my own schedule is a little hectic. So, but I'll catch up surely this summer if he has put something up.
Yeah, so what is the current situation with blasphemy and apostasy laws in Egypt? Is there actual laws against it?
Yeah. Of course there are laws against it. I mean, the biggest proof of that is Albert had to leave Egypt. you don't need to go any further than that. Blasphemy is a huge thing. People in Egypt have been known to start religious riots over children saying things that may be a little hurtful about somebody's religion. So it's not unheard of, for instance, for some girl in some place in Egypt to draw a picture of a donkey and write Muhammad on it, and the next thing you know, the whole country is in religious riots and Christians are being chased out of their houses. And then obviously on top of that, then the government has to react and collect these people and throw them in jail. And it's not just blasphemy, by the way. I mean, there was a woman and her, I think, 8 children or something like that, who were all thrown in jail for converting from Christianity, from Islam to Christianity, and given 15 years for apostasy. So it's not just blasphemy. There's a general idea that whenever people get up in arms and they start burning stuff down, the government has to react and throw somebody in jail.
And, like, does the blasphemy laws work the other way for the Christian? Because it's a sizable Christian minority in Egypt, isn't it?
It is a sizable Christian minority in Egypt, but, you know, as you can imagine, they don't have much pull. I mean, sometimes when things get aired very publicly, there will be some sort of government intervention. Like when this guy, Abu Islam, tore the Quran, there was something. But he's out now doing television shows, and this was a few months ago. You couldn't say that, for instance, about somebody who, the teacher who was locked up for blasphemy. He's got 2 years in jail, and he's not coming out anytime soon. So you can obviously see that there is an uneven application of this law.
And like I say, obviously with the revolution, was it as severe before the revolution, or has it gotten worse since the revolution?
In my opinion, it's gotten worse. It's gotten a lot worse. The little village that I'm actually that I come from originally, because I am an immigrant. I was just talking to my mother back home, and some girl took off with some guy who's a Muslim girl took off with some guy who was then rumored to be a Christian guy. And the next thing you know, the army needs to come in and protect the Christian population after a bunch of them have already fled. So it's getting worse every day, actually, in my opinion. I mean, you would hear about something like this, but not in, in such a short span of time to have Christians being attacked in many different areas of the country. And this is, again, becoming more and more a regular thing, right? I mean, it used to happen before, but it wasn't very frequent. And when it happened, it was frowned upon and people always looked down upon that kind of thing. At least for the most, it seems to have gotten way out of hand since the revolution. It seems like there's a lot less law, and basically people are just, I mean, it's not even just with the religious rioting and the attacks on the Christians, but also with things like cutting off rail systems, cutting off highways. People are just generally using a lot more, there's a lot more of mob rule. And of course, the religious minority is probably going to catch a large share of, you know, of this kind of vigilante, quasi-justice.
So are they getting demonized now, the Christian minority?
Of course. I mean, if you listen to Egyptian television, especially the religious television stuff, all you hear is statements about how the Christians are helping to break up Egypt and their work writers and things. There's all sorts of conspiracy theories, and very rarely do you not hear Christians mentioned among the conspirators. So it's not good.
All right. So are they kind of looked probably worse than the Jews are in other Islamic states? Or is it, are the Jews always going to be hated the most?
I mean, as of right now, the Jews are obviously by far the most hated, but they're not so easy to get. I mean, there's not a lot of Jews in Egypt, at least not anymore. So, you know, it's fairly easy to get at 20% of the population, which are Christians. According to some numbers, obviously, there's some dispute over how many Christians are left in Egypt, but you know, they're an a lot easier target to get to in Egypt. It's something you can sink your teeth into, rather than the Jew hating, which is usually just a lot of words because there's not a lot of Jews around to catch the bad end of that stick.
All right, so we do have a chat room question for you. It's saying, "Hey Ali, I've noticed quite a lot of anti-Shia bigotry from Sunnis lately. What's your sense? Is it increasing, or has it always been this intense?"
Well, I mean, that's actually a little bit hard to figure out, because in some sense it may have been that it has always been there, but now that every schmuck with a webcam can start a web channel, maybe we're hearing a lot more of it through that medium. When I was growing up, I never really heard a lot of things about Shiites or anything like that. However, I don't think that people talk about it on a basis, you know, in their own homes or around their own dinner table. Rather, I think that there's just a lot more of it coming through the newly created medium, the media. So I don't know. I mean, to be honest, I'm not sure. I never really took a lot of interest in that. I know that they certainly do hate each other. I know that the hatred has gone back quite a ways. I mean, this is not the first time that Shiites and Muslims and Sunnis have been at each other's throats, but you know, it's possible. I don't know if it has gotten worse. It may be. It kind of seems like it, since we're hearing a lot more about it through the television. But I couldn't really say whether or not, you know, in general it has gone up.
Well, there's a question from Neo Atheists. Do you know, like, what Albert's conditions were? Well, I think Albert will be able to answer that if he comes along himself, so we'll hold on to that. But I don't know, do you know in general what it's like in prison for apostates and blasphemers?
I think that maybe it's best to let Albert describe what happened to him, because that will give you a pretty good picture of what happens in these situations. You're not in a prison that is, you're not in an area where people are concerned about your safety. Let's just put it that way. And there's a lot of hatred towards, you know, and never mind who these people that are actually, because basically what happens is the prisoners are then let loose on these people, right? And these are people who have been caught prostituting or whatever. Obviously, even by their standards, by their own religious, they're not exactly very religious.
So in these prisons, are blasphemers the lowest of the low?
No. So what I'm saying is that the prisoners will then go and attack an apostate. And these are mostly hardened criminals that are usually in Egyptian jails because of one thing or another. I mean, usually they don't throw people who come from a clean background in a jail with criminals. But with apostasy, it seems like, yeah, they're willing to do that, and then they're willing to turn around and tell the prisoners, hey, take care of this guy. He said this about Islam. And then they just let these guys in, you know, loose within in a large cell with somebody like Albert or somebody else, and, you know, it doesn't look nice. I mean, what happens is not very good.
Okay, I think we've got someone wanting to call in to speak to you, so we'll add them in. Hello, Neo.
Hi, Troll. Hi, pleasure there to be on. Thank you for the opportunity. Ali, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Thank you.
So ask a question for Ali.
What personal experiences have you had with just Egypt in general? I mean, just the front that you actually participate on is something that's considered a taboo one in itself over in the Middle East. I actually spent a year over there myself. I was paramilitary, so I got to understand somewhat of the mindset of actually exist over there would probably be the best way to phrase it.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure what exactly you're asking. Let me see if I can get. Are you talking about people's general attitude towards religion, or which?
Yeah, their general attitude towards religion over there would probably be the best way to phrase it.
Right. Well, I mean, it's. And here's the thing, right? I mean, when I was growing up, I've been living in the States for quite a while now. When I was growing up, everybody was religious in the sense that here, everybody goes to church on Sunday, right? Well, everybody was religious in the sense that on Fridays, everybody would be in the mosque. And I mean everybody. Obviously, it's not very religious here now, so even you don't see huge swarms of people at churches on Sundays. But in Egypt, there is almost nobody in the streets during Friday prayer. Everybody goes to pray Friday. Most people will at least do the five prayers a day.
Were the bells going off five times a day when you were growing up?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Usually there's bells gather people in for those types of movements. At least that's the way it was when I saw it.
Well, right. I mean, if it's in Egypt, for instance, there is a mosque, I mean, almost every, you know, quarter of a mile. I mean, you could see the next mosque from the mosque that you're standing at. And each one of these mosques has a big microphone and with speakers that are mounted outside of the mosque. And on every prayer, every mosque does the call to prayer. So no matter where you go, you can be sleeping in your house at 4 o'clock in the morning, and Fajr prayer is called over these loudspeakers, waking everybody up. So it's there every minute of every day. In that sense, right? I mean, people are always praying. All conversations begin and end with some reference to Allah or divine being or some sense of religious reference.
It's at the beginning, part of their
at least,
yeah.
Right? So it's in the fabric of life, right? I mean, everything you do is permeated with religion.
It's the cornerstone of their existence, basically. It's their existence is based off the five pillars.
Right, so here is the thing about that, right? Because in a way, they've turned the religion into a bunch of outward signs, you know, it's kind of like the sticker, right? You wear a sticker to say, hey, I belong to this thing, right? And then on the inside, they're not supposed to lie, they're not supposed to, you know, cheat, they're not supposed to take bribes, all these other things, right? So they keep the image of the thing, right? They pray five times a day, there's all sorts of, sayings and stuff in every conversation. But almost on everything, there is, lying, there is cheating, there's all kinds of, different things. So, it seems like it's just superficial, outward expression of religion that permeates everything. But I'm not really sure how deep that goes, right?
I was just over there a year and a half ago. I actually deployed to Afghanistan when I was actually still in the military. Just getting to see Afghanistan and the religious undertone that exists there was something that sort of evolved me as an atheist, just helped give me a new perspective on religion entirely. I mean, it was an eye-opening experience for me in the greatest sense of the experience itself. It was something that was it gave me a new understanding for somebody of a Muslim mindset. I mean, it was very eye-opening. That's the best way I can phrase it.
Right. Well, Afghanistan is also, I mean, it's a special case. It's definitely far removed from Egypt just because of the type of society that exists there, right? I mean, they're mountain people, right?
Yes, they are. There's actually six tribes that exist there, and they basically are in constant conflict. It's been that way for over 2,000 years.
Exactly. Warlords and all this kind of stuff. So it's not, I don't want to say that it's certainly, you shouldn't take that to be as the archetypical Muslim, right?
Okay.
I would say that if you went to, for instance, Pakistan, right? And I mean in the bustling areas of Pakistan, you might get a better idea.
So would you say it's more like Turkey?
Oh, no, it's certainly not Turkey. Turkey is a special case in a way because of it's a lot more European than the rest of the Muslim countries.
Okay.
And I mean, they want to join the European Union, supposedly, and they're a member of NATO. So it's not the same. No, I wouldn't say that a Turk is your archetypical Muslim, although I'm not very familiar with Turkey, but it's certainly not what the majority of Muslims just look at Pakistan and parts of the Middle East that are sizable in a way, right? I mean, I wouldn't say maybe Bahrain would actually work, but, you know, Egypt, Syria, Iraq, Pakistan, those are areas that are valid for comparisons because you see a lot of the same things, right? A lot of the same dictatorial attitudes, a lot of the same ignorance, a lot of the same lack of education, treatment of women. There's a lot of similar things. Afghanistan is a bit of an extreme, in my opinion, anyways.
It is. I would fully agree on that. I mean, it is the extreme for the Middle East, but it's basically a reflection of the history that exists there, I would have to say.
Right. I mean, it's also not really in the Middle East. I mean, that section of the Muslim world, the Asian section, in my opinion. I mean, I guess Afghanistan isn't exactly Asia, but
Afghanistan's a melting pot in its core dynamic. At least that's how I look at it.
Right, right. But I wouldn't call Afghanistan a part of the Middle East. It's certainly around that region, right? But I would separate Afghanistan from the Middle East, and I certainly separate Pakistan from the Middle East as well. But Pakistan has kind of the same attributes that you would expect to see in the Middle East, right? In Egypt or Jordan or Iraq, maybe not Jordan, Iraq or Syria or some of these countries. I think that though that's what I would consider the Middle East, Saudi Arabia, all these Mediterranean countries.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on that. I mean, just its proximity to Pakistan would be what does it for me. I mean, it's basically the middle ground when it comes to Asia itself. It's Central Asia in its core dynamic. Just the mindset that exists there, the culture that has evolved from a historical precedence, at least.
Just briefly welcome Kitchen to the call. Hello, Kitch.
Hey, everybody.
And just to remind everyone, our special guest was meant to be Albert Saber, but he does seem to be running late, so we're just going to hang on to see if he turns up. So right now this is kind of an improvised chat, and kind of Ali seems to have taken on the role of special guest for today. So carry on, guys.
Yeah, I'm not sure where we were actually.
Well, okay, I'll just carry on from where I was.
Yeah, Neo, you carry on.
How would you basically outline what's the best platform you can build for the case that exists in Egypt itself?
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I understand the question. Can you maybe elaborate a little bit more on what you mean?
In Egypt itself, how would you actually just break that down to its lowest common denominator, its core concept, and how it actually exists in today's society? How it basically changed over the last.
So basically, you want a description of how I see what's going on in Egypt now. Is that basically your question? Okay. Well, I mean, I know that some people will always turn around and say, "Oh, no, it's not all religion's fault, right?" But the way I see it in Egypt, anyways, religion is the majority of the problem. I mean, if you were tomorrow to get people to stop trusting religious authorities, to walk away from religious edicts, I think that 70% of Egypt's problems would disappear. You'd still have to dig yourself out of the educational and technological hole that you're in. You'd still have to dig yourself out of some poverty. But it becomes so much easier once you get rid of religion that I think that it's really, really justifiable to say that, you know, 60-70% of Egypt's problems are religious, of religious origin. The complete, I mean, mistrust of the West and education and philosophy and Western technology is all built on this idea that everybody's out to get Islam. I mean, there's a huge amount of that. I mean, that is a huge problem. There is the idea that you can trust anybody with a beard to become the president of Egypt, whether or not they're a liar, whether or not they are just ignorant idiots. I mean, you're talking about passing up on some of the best talent the world has to offer and picking somebody like Mohammed Morsi. I mean, that's absurd when you think about it that way. And the only reason that happened is because of religion, right? I mean, I just think about it and I think Mohammed Al-Baradei is the guy who was chosen to head up the UN's nuclear division. I forget the name of the exact division that he head up. But he was he could have ran for president, except that they had some pictures of his daughter wearing a bikini, and of course you can't have your daughter wearing a bikini, and the guy was discounted right away. And instead, they picked this guy, Mohammed Morsi. So you've basically said that if you have the world's vouch for you, that you are a great administrator, we don't want you helping us. We would rather some asshole with a beard sit and guide us because he's a man of God. And so, I mean, just think about what that says about everything else, right? I mean, because if that's the kind of decision you're making here, imagine what other kinds of decisions you're making elsewhere. Do you see the point that I'm making?
Yes, I do.
My opinion, that's really the most important thing to get rid of, and that's the most important reason why we are where we are today.
Now, with that said, how much of a link would you say exists from its past? Ancient Egypt itself being the platform in which it comes from.
If it's okay, Neo, I'd like to interrupt because our featured guest has arrived. So please, everyone, welcome to the show, Albert Saber.
Hello.
Merci.
Welcome.
Hello.
Yes, thank
Albert, it's a pleasure to meet you. I mean, just your situation is an inspirational story in itself.
Yes, I am here. Please say it again.
Your story itself is just so has been inspirational for me. Thank you for being here today.
The story? Okay. My story, what happened with me in Egypt?
Yes, just the situation that you had to actually endure being of that. If that was to happen in my country, in the U.S., that wouldn't be the situation you would have to actually deal with. I mean, just the mindset that you had to be around going through that situation is an inspiration. I mean, you held your head up in that whole situation through the whole time you went through it, which is an inspiration in itself.
My situation, my name is Albert Saber. I was studying arts of philosophy. I changed my college because my leader or my teachers in my faculty would say something wrong about religion. All religion is fake. The Islam is the only true way or true religion, or all other religions is not good and something like this. So I changed my college at 2006. I am studying computer science. I was speaking about religions and beliefs in Egypt, it was so, so hard to speak about religion and democracy and politics, but I didn't care. So I know my rights, I can speak. What is the problem? Then I was a political activist. I am trying to join Kifaya movement and 6th April movement, and I was joining them in some activities until 2010, when Mohammed al-Baradei say I will support to change the politics in Egypt. I was supporting him. We was have an a paper. It is included seven wanted or instructions, something like this, to change the institution to make Egyptian out of Egypt can voting, something like this. I was supporting him, and I was speaking with people in the streets. We have to sign this paper to support our wanted or our rights. Before the revolution, I make a paper to tell people why we will make our revolution at 25 of January, and I was publishing it and sharing it and give it to people in the street. In 25 of January 2001, I was have my friends. Some of my friends was arrested. I am already escaped to tell their families and the lawyers to can help them. In Tahrir Square, everybody saw what happened with us. In the second day, the police force was fighting the lawyers and the journalists and throwing the bomb gas and something like this. And in this day, I was arrested with 14 journalists. They arrest us until second day at 2 a.m. clock. Then they make us free because the journalists say Albert is a small journalist. He is supporting us and helping us. So they make me free. Then the revolution, I was every day in Tahrir Square supporting people and make some discussion what we have to do now and what is happening in Egypt and what Mubarak saying. He changes the government and he put Omar Suleiman, but it is, we have to make another thing, it all, think what we have to do. Something like this I was doing until 25 of January 2012, the police, the secret police in Egypt and some army forces broke our home, and at 5 a.m. trying to arrest me, but I wasn't in home, and they banished my family, my mother, my sister, my father, and take every paper I have in our home, take my PC, and telling my family, you have to make Albert stop speaking about politics. Don't he mustn't make any political activists. He have to come to us because he has.
How would you say the
big case or quote? I didn't care. I think that what it is because politics. No, any problem because religion or something like this. I changed my home. I went to another flat with my mother. Then until September of 2012, many pages on Facebook. Put my photo and my telephone number, my address, all my data. They already shared it. This man is already cutting the Quran. This man don't believe in God. This man shaming Islam or shaming Muhammad, something like this. I was out of home. I wasn't in home in this day. It was New Year's Day, not Sarah's Day. Okay, many calls I get in my mobile and many SMS. They shaming me and they say to me, we will kill you. We know your house. We know you. My friend just told me that you have to go back to your home because it is dangerous, and the Muslims feeling so bad because the movie, and you are atheist, it will be so dangerous for you. I told my friend this, it is no problem. My neighbors know that I am good man, and they know my ideas. It is no problem. These people know me. No any afraid or something like this. Then when I went back to my home, some people coming to my home and saying, where is Albert Saber? I told him, I am Albert Saber, what is the problem? You cut the Quran, you make this. No, I tell them, no, nothing about this. I am already make an old videos discussing about the difference between religions. I am not shaming Islam or shaming religion. You can see my videos. They take me to CyberNet and they saw my videos. They didn't understanding. They wasn't understanding what I say. But guy say that no, he is shaming Islam. He's saying Quran and Muhammad. He is shaming us. You have to understand what he is saying. It is not a shaming, and you can't fight him because he didn't say anything is wrong or bad. Then I went back again to my home, and this day, at this day, before the police came to arrest me, nothing happened. In the second day, Thursday, many people was in a front of our house, in a front of our house, and trying to throw stones or something like this, and shaming me and my mother. We called the police. It is some people trying to fight us and trying to break the door of our house. Please come to support us or help us. Next hour, the police came, and when the police hear the people saying, when the police hear some people saying, we will throw a Molotov and burn this home, the police say, no, you have to stop now, and the police came to block our door and house, and they arresting me. My mother told them, how you can do this? We are called you to help us. How you can arrest my son? The police officer told here, don't worry, we can't help or save you now. We will take Albert to police office, and tomorrow you can come to join him and go away because we can't help you now or saving you. In police station, everybody can see the video, how people trying to attack me when the police officers was taking me. Then in police officer, in the police office, the officer asked me, what is happening? Why is these people doing this? I explained to him everything, and he told me, okay, it is no problem, don't worry. Maybe you can go out now or tomorrow, don't worry, just wait and I will see what we have to do. He makes some calls, then somebody was calling, told him how he can write the report. I was hearing what he is writing, and when he finished, he repeat what he was writing to the strange man in telephone, and then he told me, you have to sign now. I told him, no, this report is not true. It is not happening, and you say something I didn't tell you, or it is not true. He told me, you have to sign quietly. We can hurt you or attacking you, or can make people outside of the police station can come to attack you. So you have to sign and no problems. So I am signed. Then they put me in a small cell at first. Next 13 or 20 minutes, a Christian police officer, he asked, who is Albert Saber? I told him, yes, I am. Starting to shaming me and shaming my family, and he put me in another cell, and in a cell of dangerous and criminal people. He told them, this man don't believe in God, don't believe in Muhammad, don't believe in Quran. Are you agree with him? The people say no. He told them, okay, you can go on, you can do anything with him, we don't care. They fight me and they cut my my neck with a small knife, and the blood was so much. Then the police officer told him, stop, that enough. Then he told me, okay, we have something to do with you, but it is not now. He changed the cell and told the criminals in the third cell, this man mustn't be sleeping or sit down or have food or anything. He have to standing up in the bathroom. Every hour I will come to check if he was sleeping, he is sleeping or sitting down, I will punish you all. The criminals in this cell was so kind, and they saw what happened with me. They told me, don't worry, you like good man, we willn't hurt you, you have to eat, and you have to take medicine to make your blood stopping. In another day, in the second day, as they transfer me to the detector, and the detector asked me what happened with you. I told him all the story. Then I was waiting, and changed me to another detector. Another detector is higher detector. I was with him at 2 o'clock p.m. He was he was asking me until 3 o'clock a.m. in the second day. He was asking me until 12 or 13 hours. What do you believe? Why you don't believe in God? Are you really believe in God? What is your opinion about Muhammad? Was married 13 lady. What do you think about this? What is your opinion? Do you praying? Do you going to church or no? Something like this. Then he transferred me to another police station, because the first police station make with me he make people to hurt me. My lawyers told him we have to change the police station because he is not safe now. Then only 2 days I come back to the police station to the detector, and he sent me to jail. Then in at 12 of December 2012, they get me out, but I have to be in jail for 3 years. But I can pay 1,000 bawind, Egyptian bawind, to go out of jail for waiting to the another court. Then I went out of Egypt. Some organization, international organization, supporting me to make a passport and a new ID to go out of Egypt, because I can't be free.
Were you surprised?
So I am now in Europe. It is all my
Were you surprised the global backing that actually showed its support, that basically raised up to take action to support you?
Okay. I was really surprised, because many people I wasn't know them, they were supporting me. But in Egypt, the people who know me didn't speak or didn't supporting me. It is not many people, a few people was supporting me only, but many people, they was knowing me before the revolution, not after it. They know me before the revolution. They know my ideas. They know how I was trying to change the society, and how I was really, really so active. I was joining the protest activities. I was take photos to our protest and share it. I was published every data about me, my photos, my telephone number, to tell people, don't afraid, we have to do this. But I didn't.
So I think we've lost Albert for a second. Yeah, we'll try and get him back.
I'd like to comment on the scene that he described, where he was being interrogated from 2 p.m. until 3 a.m. on his religious beliefs by a government detective. I mean, that sounds like a scene out of the Inquisition, or is it not?
Yes, it does.
With prisoners beating up on him and things like that. I mean, that sounds medieval to me in many ways. I'm not sure if everybody got what he was saying there, but I mean, that sounds horrific. What he went through, and I hope that people start to view Egypt as a country that is backwards, and maybe a little bit of international shaming is in order for what's taking place to people like Albert and many others, not just him.
While he was going over it, I was actually looking in Wikipedia on just the situation overview in general, and it just seems appalling, just the situation that happened. Everything that he had to go through during that time just for being an atheist, it gives you a new perspective on what it is to be an atheist in the U.S.
Yeah, but also, I can't stress enough, Albert said it himself, the videos that these people were talking about were in no way inflammatory. I mean, by any standards, I vouch for that, right? I mean, he does criticize religion, but certainly not in any way. I mean, if somebody was doing that in the States or in English, you would think that they were bending over backwards to be polite. And the videos that Albert made were precisely that viewed under any light. And so to think that all of that is, and again, I'll stop now because it looks like we got him back, but just wanted to make sure that point was also clear. These were very mild criticisms.
I think completely. Just the situation in general seems like it's unhumane in its core dynamic of how someone could be treated in such a way in our day and age.
All right. Another point that Albert made was Albert has also been he just said this, I'm not sure, also if everybody caught on to that as well, but he's been a political activist calling for this revolution for a very, very long time. And when this situation came up, there was very little support from the revolutionaries or the so-called moderate Muslims. It's really bad enough to see the mob outside his house, but then it's even worse to hear the deafening silence about his situation. And he knew enough people where it should have made, you know, a pretty big splash about what was taking place if anybody had, you know, any sense of courage or humaneness or any of that stuff. I mean, all those values. And so, just something else to keep in mind. It's not just the extremists that are to blame for these kinds of situations, because the deafening silence is much more problematic to me than any mob outside anybody's house.
Do you have a generalized idea of how the situation for him has changed since he's moved to Europe?
Well, I think he's back. Can you hear us, Albert?
Yes.
So yeah, he is back. بيسألوك بيقول لك لما بعد ما نقلت أوروبا الحياة اتغيرت بالنسبة لك ازاي او موقفك اتغير ازاي او يعني فاهم ايه عايزين يعرفوا شبه النطة من مصر لأوروبا واخبارها معاك والناس بيعملوك ازاي حاجات زي كده.
Everything I was thinking in Egypt how to make a new system I am already found it is already exist here in Europe about how
the line is breaking up.
Yeah. It's breaking up very badly.
I could barely make out.
One or two words, but I couldn't make out any. Yeah, I think we've lost. I don't know. We'll try again with Albert to get him on, because I think his connection must be just so bad right now. We'll give it another go, and we'll just see what happens. We're getting him back. So, any other comments, guys, while we try and get Albert back?
Which part of Europe is he actually in right now, Ali?
Hungary, I believe. I think he moved to Budapest, if I remember correctly.
So, Ali, what is your personal battle with the religious included? What has it basically... What has it been? What can you outline just your personal struggle with religion and how you've gone about dealing with it?
I'm not sure. I get exactly what you're saying. You're asking me how my relationship to Islam has changed since I left? Is that the question?
What is the dynamic in which it's changed, and how would you actually say that it's changed your perspective over the struggle you've had to endure through it.
Yeah,
what has your religious struggle been like, and how have you
Okay, so are you asking me how I've my struggle is in leaving Islam? Is that what you're asking, or
basically just an overall view of what it was like to be religious and how it's changed your perspective on existence since you become an atheist?
Right. Well, I mean, I became an atheist almost as soon as I got my adult self together, if you will. I mean,
what age was that at?
I'm somewhere around 20, maybe 19. You know, somewhere around there. That's when I lost my religion in a way. By the time I was 21, I had pretty much completely lost any sense of religion. And actually, maybe a little bit older than that, maybe 21, 22, somewhere around there. And basically, I hadn't really thought about all this stuff except for the fact that I was a Muslim and I was religious and it was a part of my identity and things like that. So I don't think I ever actually really believed a lot of it. I mean, I acted as if I believed all of it. But now thinking about it, maybe I didn't believe all of it from the very beginning. And what I realized after I left is that a lot of the things that were a part of my fabric, things like sense of honor, all these kinds of things, have no meaning in my new world perspective, right? So there was a really long area of seclusion there where I just had to kind of reorient the way I view things because, you have to understand that you see, you know how honor killings and things like that, right?
Yes, I do.
And so you hear about the kind of thing, obviously, I'm assuming from your point of view, and you think, man, I can't believe anybody would think that way. But I think about it now, and I think I hope I wouldn't have done something like that, but I don't know if I would have. Do you see what I'm saying?
When you had a religious mindset, there was a humane level to it, but it actually changed while you shedded the chains of religion. That's basically what I'm getting from what you're saying, correct?
Well, right. I mean, a lot of the things, again, I like to think of myself as a good person, but your definition of good changes, right? Because things, for instance, here's the thing, right, is if you're a good person, right, and you truly believe something to be the right thing to do, and you do it even though it's the wrong thing, to you it's the right thing. Do you see what I'm saying? And so because I had based some of my right things on things that had no evidence, like religion, right, I had certain ideas about what was right that I thought that I would have died and killed for, that now turned out to be completely absurd when you realize that the things they were built on were ridiculous. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes, I do.
Right. And so there are still things that I will kill and die for, but I have lost a lot of things that I now find that I think are useless. It obviously then makes you think about the things that you really would die and live for and, you know, think about it once and twice and three times and 100 times before you decide to do it because, well, maybe, you know, later on I'll find something else out that will turn my position on that. So in a way it does kind of leave you a little bit hesitant in a way to act, but it doesn't, I mean, I'm not so hesitant that I am paralyzed, right? Because I realize that we're just, you know, barely evolved apes and we're working our ways out. And so my perspective has changed in the sense that I have tried to eliminate as many things that were built on quicksand as I could, and basically have just narrowed the things down to a smaller list that's more manageable and easier to verify. And that's basically all. My worldview has become a scientific worldview, even in the sense of principles and things like that. So that's the way in which my position has changed. But again, you could say that that's a part of becoming an adult too, because of the time period in which it happened. I happen to have been lucky and left Egypt when I was 12. But again, and now thinking about it, I'm not sure if I had stayed, if I would be, you know, one of the people breaking down Albert's door. Do you see what I'm saying? I mean, that's...
Yes, I
it's grasp. It's not very... Yeah, so...
Okay, we do have a chat room question from Tea Parties for All, and it's for Ali again. Do you think do you think moderate Muslims are generally too quiet when it comes to extremism, or are people simply ignoring moderate Muslims?
Okay. I mean, I don't want to say that moderate Muslims don't speak out against terrorism, because that's the one place where moderate Muslims speak out. I mean, every time there's a terrorist attack, you always see moderate Muslims the first thing on television saying, you know, this is not Islam. Islam is a religion of peace and all this and all that. So do they condemn terrorism when it happens? Yes, they condemn terrorism when it happens. And you can see it every time you turn on a television after something, for instance, like what just happened in Boston. I can't say how many Muslim leaders they trotted out to say these things, right? So in that sense, okay, yeah, so they do. The problem that I have with moderate Muslims and speaking out is on different things, right? I mean, there are plenty of other things that are not terrorism. They're not blowing up a building with children in it, right? That are really, really bad. I mean, yes, they're not killing children in a building bad, but they're pretty bad, and if you collect them, maybe they do get that bad, right? Like, the way, for instance, Islam treats women, right? And not really having an honest conversation about what that means and all these different things, and how could you say that it's, fair and still have all these other restrictions and things like that. There are things like the rights of minorities in Muslim majority countries are under Islamic rule, so there are a lot of other things, right, about what people are being taught about people from outside the community and things like that. And these are things that most moderate Muslims are not just not speaking out against. A lot of them are in favor of them, right? And so that's where I have a huge problem. Now, can you say that in a way also leads to terrorism and they're not speaking out about that? I think that there is a case to be made about implications about being quiet about these other things and what it has to do about terrorism. And so, you know, that's my opinion. So just take it or leave it.
Okay, Neo, did you have a question there?
Yes, I did.
All right, fire away.
Thank you, Trolling with Logic. Just the situation in general that's been progressing the last 5 years with the uprising of more rioting happening in Egypt. How do you think that plays a precedence in the mindset of what actually happened to Elbar?
Well, I mean, obviously it has a lot to do with it, with the mob. But again, you have to keep in mind that this kind of thing was not unheard of. It wasn't as frequent, right? There wasn't as many incidents where this kind of thing would happen. But it was there. It just didn't happen as much. So does Albert's situation specifically have something to do with that? Yeah, I think so. I think that a lot of what's going on with law and order and things like that is allowing for more of these things to happen.
With everything that's actually happened, do you think that change can occur and that religion can be abolished in places like Egypt in your lifetime?
I don't think in my lifetime. I mean, I guess you never really know these things, right? Because who's to say if let's say, and obviously I'm not wishing that this happens or anything like that. I'm just saying that imagine we wake up tomorrow and there's now civil war in Egypt over some religious thing, right? And tons of people die, of course, because it's a heavily populated area and it's just, you know, if a conflict breaks out in a place like that, there's going to be heavy casualties. And then, you know, do people get sick of religion because it's led them to a place where it's not very – but so maybe things get really bad and things change. I don't know, right? But it doesn't look like things are going to change anytime soon if everything else holds the same, right? If nothing else changes, then it's going to get a lot worse before it gets any better. But you can never really tell, basically, is the point.
Understandable. What about the general mindset of anti-Semites? Mindset that exists within a Muslim culture like Egypt. Do you see any action like rising up and trying to do something with Israel or something of that nature?
I don't think, at least not right now, the people who are the ruling party now, I don't think has any intention on getting Israel on the wrong side. They may have done some things that will come back to bite them in the ass. For instance, the Egyptian president has been videotaped on multiple occasions calling Jews the sons of pigs and monkeys and things like that. They fed their followers so much red meat for so long that they may be pushed into something like that. I don't think so. I mean, I think that they are much more pragmatic than being able to do that currently, the current ruling party, the Muslim Brotherhood. But who's to say? Who's to say what happens later? I don't know. This thing hasn't exactly turned out as anybody has thought it would. So, or maybe it did. I don't know. I honestly couldn't speak to that, to be honest.
Okay, I can respect that. What about the overall just mindset on a Muslim? Oh man, how can I phrase this? Just the overall Muslim mindset in the Middle East that exists. What do you think the future of it could entail?
So what happens? I'm sorry. Can you just repeat that one more time? Maybe a little bit slower, because there were a lot of words in that question.
Muslim mindset of the Middle East. How do you think that will impact the geographical location in the next 5 to 10 years?
Yeah, but I'm not sure the Muslim mindset.
What's going on in Iran? The civil.
So, are you talking about the Syria? Are you talking about the situation in Syria right now?
The situation in Syria, the one that was in that was outlined in the news 2 years ago with a revolution occurring in Iran. Just the overall.
Oh, you mean the green? I have no idea. Honestly, I've been wrong about pretty much everything that was going to happen. I mean, maybe not. Syria is going to obviously blow up. I mean, that's already been decided. Iraq is now fueling up again. There's increased, people being armed more and more. With Bahrain, it seems like the place is just a mess. I mean, it's not going to be. I don't think it'll look the same. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's theoretically possible that it stays together, but from the looks of it, by now at least Syria won't be the same country anymore. Who knows what happens? I have no idea. These are questions that I would love to be able to answer because
is there
a lot of money.
Sorry to cut you off, but is there any political issues going on in the Middle East that you would like to just reflect on, given your own personal experience?
Well, I know a lot about what's going on in Egypt. I mean, that situation in Egypt is something that I follow closely.
And would you like to personally reflect on it just from your own general overview of it?
Right. Well, I mean, I've kind of given you an idea of what I was talking about when I was talking about the attitude of people picking somebody like a Mohamed Morsi over a Mohammed al-Baradei, and in Egypt right now, there is the only way to get out of this thing is to either just get rid of the religion. And so how you do that is very unclear right now, and there's a lot of different people are talking about a lot of different things, right? Most people are not confronting the idea that it's the religion. They're all still stuck on the idea that it's the extremists, right?
Now, what groups do you think are the most likely to basically take on the religious issue itself that is an organized group over there?
See, that's the thing, is there really isn't anything like that right now. The trick is to get people to start to admit that it's purely religion. And you see some people breaking out at the seams talking about this kind of thing, right? At least some people are now beginning to say things like, the religion is in your home, right? You do it in your house. The government looks at everybody the same and things like that. So there is that. They're not saying anything's wrong with the religion or anything like that. And you probably wouldn't expect them to. But there are some very few liberals who are starting to talk about, hey, you know, religion is not something that the government should be getting involved in. They're mostly leftists. I mean, obviously, there's people are starting to get fed up with some of what's going on with the Muslim Brotherhood and things like that. But I mean, it just seems like there's such a huge odds to beat that there's just going to be a lot of work for many, many years to come in order for anything like people breaking out of the situation that we're in even begins to occur. But there are people breaking out at the seams. So, you know, there's hard work to be done. That's for sure.
How do you think Mohamed Morsi will last the full term of his presidency, or will there be another uprising in Egypt, given his, from what I hear from friends I have there, his unpopularity?
No, I highly doubt he'll be ousted before his term. I mean, it's highly doubtful. I don't think so. I mean, these people have their own militias. I just don't see how you do that without turning the place into a civil war. I mean, I guess you could turn it into a civil war, but then, you know, you haven't really ousted him. You just started a civil war. So it's very hard to see how you'd get him out before his time.
What's your overall view of what's been going on in Syria?
Well, I mean, I'm starting to hear talk about, well, they're going to intervene because they think Bashar, excuse me, you should get a drink. That Bashar is using nerve gas and things like that, and now they're going to intervene against Bashar. I mean, I just don't feel so good about that. I don't feel good about what's coming in Syria. From what I see, that there's a lot of footage coming out of Syria of people cutting each other's throats with knives. I mean, that's very personal.
I remember the original videos that were coming out. Children just laid out that basically struck a chord with me. I mean, you've been seeing videos like just of that nature coming out.
Not even that. I mean, it's not just. I mean, that's what you saw on television. If you just have a little bit of, there are people who are posting this with English titles and stuff, so you could probably find some of the stuff. But the videos that are coming out are, and this is continuous, right? I mean, it wasn't just this one video of children. People are literally taking each other out into the desert and slitting each other's throats while screaming Shiite or a Sunni expletives at each other. Literally just slitting their throats. I'm sorry?
Do you believe these are mercy killings or?
Mercy killings. They're slitting each other's throats with knives over religion. I mean, that is barbarism.
That's how they view it, at least.
Oh, no, they're saying it while they're slitting each other's throats. They're saying, this apostate Shiite, son of a blah, 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 he will die, Allah, blah, 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 and they're cutting each other's throats while they're saying this. I don't have to guess anything. I mean, that's what they're telling us while they're doing it. So it's not good. Whatever happens in Syria, it's not going to be good, and I don't like anybody having a hand in it because it's really bad, and I don't think it's going to get any better by taking out Bashar al-Assad. I think that unless you plan on going in with ground troops like you did in Iraq and playing referee and trying to hold the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Kurds from killing each other, that you just leave it alone for now. Because I don't think anybody has the stomach for doing that. And if you – I mean, it's really bad. I don't know if there's any right answers to what happens in Syria. It's going to be bad no matter what.
But the U.S. doing it is the wrong – at least from my perspective on it, is the wrong – mindset to actually come in, because look at what it's done in Iraq. I mean, that's not the case, it has to come. I mean, the UN has to be the one to mobilize a task force, and they have to be the ones to go in. The U.S. going in will basically it's basically adding fuel to a powder keg.
See, I don't agree with that. I mean, I think that here's the way. I know that Iraq was a stupid move when it happened, right? Because it was dumb, right? I say this all the time, but. It was. I mean, there's no question about that, right? But I want people to think. I always just think about. Keep this image in your head, okay? U.S. does nothing to Iraq. Saddam Hussein is president of Iraq, and the Arab Spring happens, and Saddam Hussein is removed, or now the Shiites are uprising. Okay?
Okay.
Think about what we're talking about here, because the death toll in Syria, I think, has already surpassed the death toll in Iraq, if I'm not mistaken, or close to it. Right.
Yes,
in 2 years. In 2 years, okay? I just think about Saddam Hussein being removed during the Arab Spring, or a Shiite uprising happening, and having that going on while this is going on. And I think to myself, man, the U.S. being there and holding the Shiites and the Sunnis from killing each other must have saved – I mean, just imagine how many more people are going to die before this thing in Syria is over. I think that if the United States was to go in, right, I think that the United States doesn't go in now, okay? And we compare. We say, okay, look, when the United States was the referee, you only killed this many of each other. When we didn't do anything, this is how many you killed of each other, right? And so – I don't know. I mean, it's tough. These are really, really. I mean, this is the stuff that ethicists sit around and talk about for years. I don't know what the right decision is, right? Do you do that and say, well, we'll just let all these people die to teach them a lesson, or does it come to a point where you go, well, shit, we got to do something to stop them from killing each other because it's just becoming way too much killing?
The reason I was saying the UN needs to be the one to do it, though, is just the basis that, I mean, look at the war fronts in Afghanistan and Iraq. I mean, we basically have been over there for over a decade. I mean, we can't. Going in there will just cause the same situation that sprung up in Afghanistan. I mean, it's not something that we are – the U.S. can feasibly do with our military. Not to mention the financial cost of going into the Middle East on another front is just too much for us to handle. It has to be from the EU's perspective, the UN, or some other global task force. Some global task force has to be arranged to handle this situation. That's something that will be more of a power move than the U.S. just going in and playing Big Brother and playing power, basically just throwing their hand into a power struggle. That's how
here's my problem with that, right? Why shouldn't the U.S. go and do that? I mean, I honestly
we've been doing it for the last 12 years.
I trust the United States more than I trust any other force in the world. And again, I am a firm believer that the United States should play a leading role. Why not? I mean, I think that overall, mistakes made and all, and admittedly, right? I think that the United States is an overall force for good, with mistakes given, right? I mean, nobody's perfect, right? But I don't trust Russia or China. I don't think Russia or China are going to give a shit about how many Syrians are dying, right?
You do have the UK. You have other countries that are powerhouses on the global scene that can go in.
Powerhouses. France couldn't keep up a bombing campaign over Libya for like a week. They were running out of missiles. I mean, who are we talking about here? Yeah, okay. They are countries that have names and that, you know, people look at them as in they are big shots, but I mean, France and England. What the? Their armies are nothing. I mean, they have no power. It's actually pretty pathetic if you ask me. I mean, they can't do anything without the United States.
One of the largest powerhouses, from an economic standpoint, is the EU. If they basically form a military of the countries that are actually part of their charter, that's something that would be of a powerhouse and actually be able to go in and handle the situation fairly effectively, as much, if not more, than the U.S. Not to mention that would be more of a unified version of going in and handling the situation. Not just one country going in and handling the situation that could possibly blow out of proportion for the U.S. yet again. We don't need another war front to basically tarnish our already impeding reputation on a global scene.
Right. I mean, I think that that's going to change. I think that the United States will be seen more and more as has done some very good things, all in all, for these countries in the Middle East that are being incredibly ungrateful right now. So, you know, I think that there's a tide coming, and I think it's gonna switch the direction of some things, and people will see. We'll see what happens when the United States says, "I'm not going to do anything, and we'll just let you guys deal with it." Right? You don't want us there. You don't want us here. And I think that if that happens, that you'll see that. But I don't know if that's the right moral decision to make, right? Because do you do that? Or do you know, okay, they're going to hate us either way, all right?
But the U.S. is not, it's not our job. We basically have been dealing with this for the last 12 years. Someone else needs to unify and step up and actually do something on a global scene. There's countries in the EU, there's countries that are attached to the UN that are able to step up and actually just form a task force, go in, and first lay on sanctions. If the sanctions don't work, basically unify, task force, let the task force take care of the problem. That's something right. that is a feasible action that the U.S. could be involved in, but doesn't have to be the driving force behind. We've already done that on our two-front system that it, our country is feeling the economic repercussions for. We are
I
not.
Mean, I hear all that. I hear all that. Believe me, don't get me wrong. Right, I understand that.
That's
obviously we have right, but NATO is America. I mean. Let's not kid anybody.
It is allies.
There are allies, but does the United States shoulder something like 80% of the burden of NATO or something like that? I mean, even more. I mean, let's be realistic here. When we say NATO, we talk about the United States doing something, right? I mean, that's who's supplying NATO. So I don't have a problem with NATO doing it. I mean, I have no problem with that. So. If NATO is the one who's going to go into Syria and do something, and again, I'm not sure that that's the right decision either. I'm actually, I don't know. I don't know what the right decision is to make here. I think that there are arguments to be made for all those positions. I mean, I've said it earlier. I've said, do you go in and help and know that somebody's going to hate you, or do you wait and let the murder go on and then say, look, this is what happens, or what's the more – who knows what the right decision to make is. I tend to think that it's always best to take the morally defensible position, and if you think that something really bad is going on, then you should probably step in and try to at least stop it. Even if you catch some flack for it, everybody has to look at the situation and see what they can live with and what their conscience allows for. Now, obviously, a country that has just been through Iraq and Afghanistan, like you said, reasonably is going to be a little shy to do any of this other stuff. So that makes sense. I mean, I'm not saying that your position is wrong. I don't know, but I just think that if there is a situation where we really should step in, that I hope that what happened in Iraq and Afghanistan doesn't cloud the judgment and allow for something horrible to happen because, we're afraid to go in and do something. You see what I'm saying? But by any means, you've got a reasonable position.
The show's about to end. Just let me end on a note, and then I'll hand it back over trolling with logic. The platform in which you're stating, completely understand, and I can respect immensely. It's just, it would mean more if a united front on a global aspect did this instead of just Big Brother the U.S.
If they could, then I mean, I'm not opposed to the world doing that. I'm just saying that I don't think that they will. I think that if the United States doesn't do it, it's not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. Who's going to do it?
With that
you
said,
say I'm, Europe would do it. I don't know. I don't know that they would.
Yeah.
With that said, trolling with logic. Do you want to close out?
Yeah. Thank you everyone for turning up for a quite truncated show. A big thank you for Albert for the time we had him. I'm sure everybody was quite moved by that story. I'd like to thank Ali for taking the time out to come along. Sorry about the connection issues, Ali.
Oh, yeah, no problem. I didn't have any connections. I think that's
Yeah, it was just Albert and that, yeah. I'm sorry about what happened. Thank you to Neo Atheist for joining in at the last second as well.
Not a problem. Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks for Kitch for popping in for a few words.
No problem. Sorry, I couldn't contribute more, but these late night shows are a kidder. Can't wait to get back in 2 weeks into my own time.
Okay. Like I say, we're back next weekend. We're back at a regular time of 6 p.m. UK. That's 1 p.m. Eastern. Our special guest is Debbie Goddard, and she is the president of African Americans for Humanism.
Cool.
So thank you all very, very much for the show. I hope you all enjoyed what we managed to make of it. I say thank you for Albert for the little time we had with him. And like I said, thank you to my co-host, and the show will be up on iTunes and YouTube within the next few days. Thank you everyone, and have a good afternoon or good evening or morning or whatever it is. Good night everyone.
Good night everybody.
Have a good evening, guys.